Morning. How much time would you like to reserve?
If I could reserve 3 minutes. Good morning, Your Honors. Gregory Link, representing Corrine Harris in this matter. Mr. Harris asks that the court reverse his conviction of first-degree murder as the state did not prove that his act caused the death of the victim 14 months after the act was committed. Importantly, proximate causes in criminal cases.
Do you concede that there was but-for causation?
You know, we don't. We've actually challenged that, too. And I'm not sure why the state believes we haven't, because proximate cause in the criminal context has always been understood to encompass both but-for and legal causation. And I think specifically with respect to the expert's inability to say with any degree of medical certainty that there was some link between the act and the death. I think that undercuts the state's ability to prove but-for causation here.
And what criminal case are you relying on for purposes of the proposition that the evidence was inadequate?
I don't know that there is a criminal case that is specifically addressed this question. I mean, this seems to be a unique fact pattern in many respects. I think that's illustrated in both our brief and the state's brief, and that we're trying to...
Why is it so unique? He was shot 5 times...
And did not die. No, he died 14 months later from pneumonia.
Right.
That is a unique fact pattern. I mean, the state in its brief points to the Perez.
Well, what else was the reason that he died?
Pneumonia.
I know, but why isn't there a but-for causation
if
nexus?
If that's but-for causation, then any person who's ever been injured from a criminal act, who subsequently dies 10, 15, 20, 30 years down the road.
But we had medical testimony.
We didn't have medical testimony. What we had is that this is a possible mechanism of death. Even the medical examiners were quite clear. They could not say to any degree of certainty that the pneumonia was directly linked to the shooting. They postulated that perhaps he aspirated, and therefore that's what caused the pneumonia. But they could not even say with any degree of certainty that that was true. That was the cause of the pneumonia. What we know is that a heavy drinker, heavy smoker, came down with pneumonia in January and died. That's what we know. And that person happened to have been shot 14 months earlier. He recovered from his injuries. He went through rehabilitation. He was cleared to go back to work. We know that he recovered from his injuries. And then as a heavy smoker and heavy drinker, he got pneumonia in January and died.
Your other argument is that the state did not prove legal causation, and we have the Bauer case. What is your premise is that the state has to prove legal causation. What's your basis for that? What case law are you relying on for the proposition that the jury must decide legal causation?
The Supreme Court has previously said that proximate causation in a criminal case is a question of fact for the jury.
It's
cited in our brief. It starts with an E, and I apologize. I will make a note and give it to the court. But it is specifically determined that the jury must determine causation, both cause and fact and legal causation.
Well, no. Cause and fact, yes, and that's what the WIPIC instruction reflects is cause and fact. But legal causation, I don't know of a case that says that that's a question for the jury. Legal causation, as defined in Bauer.
It is defined in Bauer.
As defined in Bauer, why is that a question for the jury?
Bauer doesn't address the issue because Bauer was an abstract. It was a pretrial dismissal. So it doesn't get to the question of who makes that determination. But I think
you're extending Bauer
the
then?
The fact that Bauer reached the question on a NAPSTAT, which is the criminal equivalent of a summary judgment, that it is that the facts are undisputed, there was not proximate.
Right.
It reached it in that context. I think that illustrates that it is a factual question that goes to the jury. That was the basis for the dismissal, that the state could not prove proximate causation in that case.
You're asserting then that the issue of legal causation is a factual matter for the jury?
I'm asserting that Bauer found that the question of proximate cause is a...
That's not the question I asked you. Actually, are you asserting that legal causation is a question of fact for the jury?
Bauer resolved Bauer says.
All right.
Bauer resolved it as a factual question in the context of a NAPSTAT. That is a factual motion. It is not a legal motion. That is the context in which the issue was presented to Bauer, and Bauer found that that wasn't good enough. Bauer expressly says that in criminal cases, proximate cause, legal causation specifically, must be narrower than it is in the tort context. That is what Bauer says. Now, Bauer didn't specifically address this fact pattern. No state court has ever addressed this specific fact pattern. But if we look at the cases that Bauer pointed to, the out-of-state cases, it relies on those cases for this very proposition that Mr. Harris is making today, that there has to be a narrowing of legal causation, that there must be a far more direct connection between the act and the injury. And I think it is useful to look at the tort cases.
In those out-of-state cases, did the courts address whether it's a question of for the jury to decide?
Here again, not specifically, but again, I think if we look at the context of Bauer, that it is a Napstead motion, a factual motion. It is clear that the court is treating it as a factual issue.
Well, they didn't have to because the facts weren't disputed.
Well, the facts weren't in dispute, but they get to then pull the issue from the jury on the question of proximate cause. They didn't. There's no doubt that but-for causation was established.
Well, it didn't have anything to do with the jury.
Well, an Napstead motion, by definition, does have something to do with the jury because it's a motion that says you can't submit this case to the jury. That's the standard of Napstead.
Well, that would be true of determination as a matter of law and causation also, which Dennison held.
Proximate cause is a question of fact for the jury, and that is it is in the – and I will pull the cases out of my brief and point the court to them. It is clear here that the state didn't prove legal causation. If this had been a wrongful death action, the state couldn't have proved the tort of wrongful death, and yet we're going to allow the state to convict an individual of murder based on less evidence than that. And I think the Atten case is useful as well, because the state could not have even established the corpus delicti of murder if it cannot say to a degree of medical certainty that this was not the result of natural causes. And I'll go ahead and use an additional minute of my time if I could. Atten illustrates, I think, the importance of being able to establish the certainty of the link between the act and the harm. Corpus delicti is an extraordinarily low standard. It's essentially probable cause or reason to believe. And if for the state Supreme Court in Atten to say that this quantity of evidence wouldn't even get you over that first hurdle, I think necessarily means it can't get you over the hurdle of proof beyond a reasonable doubt. And that's what the state's asking for here. Their own experts were unable to say to any degree of medical certainty that this act, in fact, directly caused the death. They offered that it was possible. They even offered that it was a contributing factor. They even offered that it might have been the most significant contributing factor. But they could never say to any degree of medical certainty that it led directly to the harm. And I don't think that establishes proximate causation, and I don't think the conviction can stand. And I'd ask this court to reverse his conviction. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Kristen Relier, Deputy Prosecuting Attorney for King County, representing the state of Washington. This court should affirm Mr. Harris's conviction for murder in the first degree for two reasons. First, because he was the legal cause of Lee Gant's death, and second, because he was the cause in fact.
Why don't you start with the second part first?
I'd be happy to. Here, admitting the truth of the state's evidence and drawing all reasonable inferences in favor of the state, there was substantial evidence that Mr. Harris was the cause, in fact, of the victim's injuries. Both the associate medical examiner, Dr. Williams, and the chief medical examiner, Dr. Harif, testified that Mr. Gant's cause of death was pneumonia due to multiple remote gunshot wounds. And specifically for Dr. Williams, that was at 22 RP 167 to 68, and for Dr. Harif, 27 RP 22. The defense expert here thought that the gunshot wounds had nothing to do with pneumonia. Essentially, this case came down to a battle of the experts, and the jury credited the state's experts.
So the argument is that the state's experts did not testify based on a degree of reasonable medical certainty. What's your response to that argument?
Yes, thank you. I want to correct that. Dr. Harif testified that he was 100% certain that the gunshot wounds and the resulting injuries were the major contributing factor. That's a direct quote in Mr. Gant's death, and that was specifically at 27 RP 37. What the medical examiners could not testify to with reasonable medical certainty was how Mr. Gant got E. coli pneumonia. And both Dr. Williams and Dr. Harif testified that it's not uncommon to not know the exact mechanism by way of which the victim succumbed to pneumonia or contracted it. Here it's clear that it was either the mouth or the bloodstream, and it's important that it was to note that it was E. coli pneumonia, because E. coli is not a common type of pneumonia, and it's a major bacteria that's universally present in the colon, which is exactly where Mr. Gant sustained major injuries and permanent anatomic changes as a result of the five bullets that Mr. Harris fired at him.
Is there evidence that they were permanent injuries?
Oh, yes, absolutely. He was missing two valves, specifically the pylorus, which I've now come to understand is what connects the stomach and the small intestine, and then the cecum, which connects the small intestine and the large intestine. That's important because those are one-way valves that are supposed to keep your food going down. And for Mr. Gant, he was susceptible to the food backing up and then him aspirating. He also, though, could have gotten it through his bloodstream because, unfortunately, his organs, according to Dr. Williams, after he did the autopsy and held those organs in his hand, were one matted mass. His organs were not fluid and able to move around like most of ours. His were actually glued or cemented on, that was the testimony, to the inside of the abdominal wall. And because E. coli is in the colon, the large intestine, it is not uncommon for that E. coli to seep out into the bloodstream and then travel to his lungs. So while it's true that neither Dr. Harif or Dr. Williams could say with reasonable medical certainty how Mr. Gant's pneumonia started, they were both certain that the gunshot wounds and the resulting injuries directly resulted in E. coli pneumonia.
And the surgeries?
And the surgeries, yes. That's what I mean when I say resulting injuries. Yes, thank you. Yes. I would just note that if what defense is saying is true, they have to prove the precise mechanism by which the victim contracted pneumonia, then that would mean that a victim who promptly died after being shot in the lungs, that if the experts could not say if the victim died from bleeding out or from inability to breathe, then the defendant wouldn't be the cause in fact, and that can't be the case. Turning just briefly to legal causation.
Is that a question for the jury?
No, it's not. Legal causation is a legal issue. Colbert and Bauer, which are cited in the briefs, make clear that it is a question of law for the court.
Well, Bauer is the most recent
case.
And so what's the other case?
Colbert versus Mumba, it's a civil case. And it basically talks about how it's a policy question for the court.
Well, there are lots of civil cases, and we're aware of tort law, but this isn't tort law.
No, it's not. And the only connection to tort law and legal causation is that Bauer held that the question of legal causation is narrower in the criminal context.
And so in that context, the court was comparing civil tort concepts of legal causation with criminal.
Yes.
But that doesn't mean we rely on civil legal causation concepts.
No, you don't need to. There's plenty in the criminal case law that makes clear that to your specific question of whether or not legal causation is a question for the jury, it's not.
That's okay, so what case are you relying on for that?
Bauer.
Bauer doesn't really reach that.
I would say that it's probably dicta as they're laying out the legal standard before they actually apply it. But I would just note that this case is not Bauer. In Bauer, the facts were not disputed. In Bauer, the defendant kept a loaded, unsecured gun in his home that a 9-year-old took unbeknownst to the defendant.
No, it's factually distinguishable because it had to do with a charge that related to negligence, not intentional.
Yes. It is also distinguishable in that way.
And I think Bauer makes that point later when they cite to Perez-Cervantes.
Yes. This case is much more analogous to Perez-Cervantes because in that case, the court affirmed the defendant's murder conviction for stabbing the victim, even though the victim subsequently used cocaine and heroin, which might have contributed to his death.
Well, it's not really analogous, because in Perez-Cervantes, there was only one expert witness.
That's true. But here, just going back to the sufficiency of the evidence standard, this really was a battle of the experts when it came to causation. And on review, the court...
Well, causation as to the mechanism.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. To the cause and fact. Yes. My point only being that the court has to defer to the jury on conflicting testimony, witness credibility, and persuasiveness of the evidence. Unless the court has any questions on those two specific issues, I'll rely on my briefing regarding the instructional issues and just ask the court to affirm Mr. Harris's conviction.
Well, before you sit down, the instruction, the WIPIC.
Yes.
It's a cause and fact, proximate cause instruction.
It is.
So isn't that sort of the end of the analysis? I know that Mr. Harris is arguing that it should also include language related to legal causation, but that then turns on whether that's a question for the jury.
That's right. And I would just note that Mr. Harris hasn't actually proposed any language that he says should have been in the jury instruction. And I'm not even sure how you would ask the jury.
Well, if it's not a question for the jury, it wouldn't be in the jury instruction.
I couldn't agree more.
All right, thank you.
Just ask this court to affirm Mr. Harris's conviction. It is supported by substantial and sufficient evidence. Thank you.
I think where the state goes awry is when it says that the expert says that the pneumonia was due to the gunshot. They didn't say due to. They said he died of pneumonia and there was remote gunshot wounds. It never said due to, and they were quite careful in their testimony, both in their direct testimony and the cross-examination, not to make that link. They expressly acknowledged they could not make the link. They expressly acknowledged that they could not medically determine the cause of the pneumonia that caused his death. They expressly acknowledged that they were merely identifying possible causes. That's Dr. Williams' testimony on October 2nd at page 170. Dr. Huruff acknowledged, I can't prove either mechanism was the cause of death. That's on October 14th at page 79. Dr. Huruff stated, I can't determine the direct cause of death. But he acknowledged that's not our task. They were clear that they classify any event as a homicide so long as there is any natural cause, regardless of the degree to which it contributes to the ultimate death.
So what is the case you're relying on for the proposition that legal causation is a question for the jury?
In State versus Engstrom, the Supreme Court at 79 Washington 2nd at 465, the Supreme Court said the jury must determine the cause of death. And to the extent we want to talk about the jury instructions, what the jury instruction must do is it must require the jury to find everything necessary to establish proximate cause. In the civil context, they must establish that they must find that the act contributed more than 50% to the death. That's what's required to assure that proximate causation is established in the tort context.
Well, in the tort context, in civil.
In this case.
In civil, it is not up to the jury to decide legal causation.
They're required to find that fact that's necessary to establish causation. They are required to find, based upon medical testimony, to a degree of medical certainty, that the cause of death more likely than not caused it. In this instance, they have to find that his act directly caused the death. They didn't do that, and we'd ask that Mr. Harris's conviction be reversed. Thank you.
The next case.